Divine Mercy Sunday, the culmination of the 8 days, the octave of Easter, that the way in which the resurrection was meant to shock us, to surprise us by its unexpectedness, the culmination of the 8 days of Easter today on Divine Mercy Sunday, that the mercy of God is meant to be something that shocks us. If the reality of God's mercy isn't something that scandalizes us to some extent, if it doesn't scandalize us, there's something about it that we just don't understand, that we don't grasp the full power of it or our need for it. The importance of both receiving God's mercy for ourselves and then also giving that mercy. 100 years ago, no one had seen the image we have out today of the divine mercy. That didn't exist 100 years ago. And in fact, there was no Divine Mercy Sunday until a couple decades ago. But in 1934, a little Polish sister, Sister Faustina, had an encounter with the risen Christ, as the apostles did today. She had a number of these encounters with him, and this was 1934, in which the European continent had just been shaken by the horrors of World War I, the war to end all wars, and it was right on the doorstep of one of the darkest times in history that the world was about to enter into in World War II. And it was in the midst of that that Jesus came to Sister Faustina and said that he desired from his heart that people, especially now, turn to his divine mercy, and that it was more important now than ever. Sister Faustina was asked by the Lord to record the different things that he showed her and spoke to her in a diary. And this is the diary of Saint Faustina. The image that Jesus asked to be painted of divine mercy, you can't see it too well here, but the image and what he had asked is that the background be a pitch dark black. And from the darkness of that black, Jesus is coming out as light. And the diary of Sister Faustina is one that's filled with hope. It's filled with hope, but hope, everyone, isn't real if despair and the reality of despair, which is living in hell while living on earth still, isn't a real thing. And that salvation isn't real at all if hell is not real. And that it's not just something for just the select few horrible people. One of the visions that Jesus showed Sister Faustina was a vision of the reality of hell and the horrors of it. And she wrote that, "I noticed one thing, that most of the souls there are those who disbelieved to some extent that there really is a hell." That he showed her this vision of hell to help first her, but the whole world, to see its desperate need for mercy, both for ourselves and for the whole world. Jesus showed her another vision on a New Year's Eve of all the sin in the world at that moment. And it was so overpowering that she had fainted. And when she came to, she said to Jesus, "I don't get you. I don't understand you one bit. Why do you keep showing us mercy? Why do you keep showing us mercy? Divine mercy is something the angels don't even comprehend. It's beyond them with their incredible intelligence. But you know what we've done in our modern sensibilities is we've taken both God and mercy and we've tamed them. God is good, but he is not tame. He is wild. He is wild like a lion, but he is good. And his mercy, divine mercy, is something that is wild. And we've domesticated it like a pet so that it fits comfortably into our lives and our ideas of God and religion. But when we've tamed mercy, what we've done is we've lost how radical and how scandalous it is. The prisoners who were in the largest and most notorious concentration camp of World War II, Auschwitz, they called the man who was in charge, the commandant there, simply the animal. They didn't call him a bad man, they called him an animal. Commandant Rudolf Höss. He was the one who came up with the idea of a concentration camp such as Auschwitz that would be more efficient. And for the first 3 years of this camp, he was the commandant. And over those 3 years, he oversaw the death of 2.5 million people. He was transferred to another assignment where he was needed, but he wrote to the very top, to Hitler, and begged that he could return to Auschwitz. Begged to go back so he could complete what he had finished, what he had begun. And he was allowed to return there, where in that final year, another 400,000 people were killed. 1 in 6 Jews that died in the Holocaust died in Auschwitz under this man. And this concentration camp in Poland, it wasn't just the Jews, it was also the many Catholics of that country, the gypsies, anyone who opposed the party. One of the groups that was gathered one day was the whole community of Jesuits in Krakow, Poland. They took and they gathered every one of them that was there, and they brought them to Auschwitz. There was one man who wasn't there at the time, and it was the Jesuit superior of that house. And when he returned home and saw what had happened, his heart shattered, and he said, "I need to be with my brothers. I need to be with my brothers." And so he went, and he snuck into Auschwitz. Everyone's trying to sneak out. Here's this crazy Jesuit. He was trying to sneak into Auschwitz. And he was caught. And the guards brought him directly to the office of Commandant Rudolf Höss, and they were sure he would be summarily executed on the spot. They waited about a half hour. And much to their shock, Rudolf Höss came out with this Jesuit priest and said, "Show him to the gate. He's going home." They were shocked. They weren't sure if he was impressed by this man's courage or if it would just be more torture for him to be at home without his brothers while his brothers suffered. Whatever the reason, though, he sent this one priest home. After the war had ended, Rudolf Höss ran scared. He was caught. He was put on trial for crimes against humanity, and he was convicted to be hung at Auschwitz, the very place where, under his control, nearly 3 million people had been killed. He wrote after his conviction to his wife that he wasn't scared at all of death. He had faced death, he said, for years. But what he was terrified of is what they would do to him at the prison while he awaited death. Because these very people who would be his prison guards now were the ones who were in Auschwitz, the very people whom their wives and kids he had slaughtered. And he was terrified of this. But to his complete shock, he said that when he was in this jail, in a little town called Wadowice, which was the hometown of a young Karol Wojtyła, who became John Paul II. When he was in this prison in Wadowice, the people there treated him with immense goodness. He was shocked. They treated him with such kindness, with a gentleness, and with a respect as a human. He couldn't understand it. He couldn't comprehend it. They treated him mercifully. Mercy is love that we don't deserve. And he wrote in a letter to his wife, especially now during my last days, I'm experiencing such humane treatment as I could have never expected. In spite of everything that happened, they still treat me as a human being. It came out later that they were actually praying for him as well. The guards and the people in this camp were. They were actually good to him. Rudolf Huss had grown up Catholic. He was an altar boy. He'd even dreamed of one day being a priest at one point, but by the age of 20, he completely denounced and turned from his faith. But now those days in this prison and their goodness and kindness to him, it did something within him. It opened his hardened heart. And he had asked in his last week if they could find a priest who would come in to hear his confession. And so they asked all around to any priest they could get in touch with, and none of them. Remember, this was right after the Holocaust. None of the priests would come and speak to this animal. And they came and told him that. There's not a priest who will speak with you. And he said, no, there's one. There's one. And he remembered his name. He said, Father Vladislav Lone. There's a Father Vladislav Lone. Please try and find him. Vladislav Lone. And they looked and looked, and they found Father Vladislav Lone, who no longer had a community. He was now the chaplain at the Divine Mercy Shrine just outside of Krakow. And Father Lone came, and he visited with Rudolf for hours and hours in his cell together with him alone. And Rudolf Huss confessed, and he received absolution. Those whose sins you forgive are forgiven them. Those whose sins you retain are retained. And the next day, Father Lone came back, and he brought with him now the Eucharist. And the guard who is in the cell with Father Lone and Rudolf said that Commandant Rudolf Huss received the Eucharist on his knees, weeping like a small child. He wrote a letter that he had asked if the Polish newspapers would, in their kindness, publish. He wrote an open letter to the Polish people in which he wrote, I know what I did. I know how great is my sin and my guilt. But God forgave me. And now I ask you, the Polish nation, the Polish people, to forgive me as well. I hope and I pray that you can do it. If this animal of a man had slaughtered your spouse and your children, how would you respond to his plea for mercy? How would you respond? Jesus told Sister Faustina in one of her encounters with him that when someone hurts you and harms you deeply, not only to forgive, but to ask, what good can I do for that person? What good can I do for that person? To truly love your enemies, to bless them. This is Christianity. Nothing less. This is divine mercy. Nothing less than scandalous. Do not be unbelieving, but believe.